This is episode 389. We often hear that the cause of all modern diseases like cancer, diabetes, menopause suffering, and well, insert problem or disease, pretty much all of it is due to the horrifically poor food, nutrition, and overall diet that most people in the West have. But what if there's something worse? What if it's actually our exposure to excessive light and electricity? What? Now, before you go and order a tinfoil hat for immediate delivery, stick with me here, because on this episode, we speak with Pia Kynok, whom is a researcher, skin and nervous system specialist, and an expert in light and EMFs and their impact on the body and the way that they can cause disease. There's a fascinating amount to learn here, and if you're at all curious, I'd like you to consider sticking around right until the end so we can really blow your mind apart. Okay, let's get into it.
Welcome to the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. You've tuned in because you want to start taking your health seriously so you don't, well, get sick and die. Here we talk all things health, nutrition, and human optimization. Let's jump into it with your host and resident scientist, Maddie Lansdowne.
What's up, my healthy friends? I'm coming to you from the freezing cold and confusing weather pattern center of the universe, otherwise known as Melbourne, Australia. Now, we've got a bit going on this year, and that being 2024, when it's my mission to coach 500 people to get control of their sugar cravings and sugar binges so they can stop yo-yo dieting, stop obsessing about food, and finally create a body that they feel confident being in. The links to get involved in the programs that we run for emotional binge and overeating are down in the show notes below or the caption. Now, we've got a back by popular demand podcast guest today. We have Pia Kynok, who originally appeared on episode 363 talking about how unnatural light from light globes and screens is toxic and why the sun ain't so bad after all. The fan, client, follower, and listener comments went bananas for Pia, so we've gotten her back to tickle your pickle just a little bit more. Now, just a quick recap about Pia. She's a well-being practitioner, coach, researcher, and an author that is passionate about focusing people's attention on a true root cause approach for healing. And that's to a level of depth that I believe is deeper than even your average natural health practitioner. And without further ado, Pia, welcome back to the show.
Yay, the crowd goes wild.
They really do.
Very excited to be here. Thanks, everybody. And similar to last episode, I would love to just offer a little opportunity for presencing ourselves to ourselves, because no matter how you're listening to this, where you're listening to this, other things have gone on before. And it can just be really nice to arrive in the present moment. So I invite you to just have a look around at your current location. Like literally just kind of orient yourself more intentionally, more specifically to where you are in time and space. Like let the slowest parts of you catch up to this moment of now. And then you might just find your feet, whether you're sitting down or standing up, really noticing your feet, like activating some pressure, some awareness through your feet and your legs. I call this grounding in. You know, when you press through your feet, you tend to elevate a little bit through your spine naturally. So it's like you lift up out of your hips. And when you do that, you usually find that there's a little more openness through your front of your chest. And you can start breathing a little differently. You don't have to, but it's just that open invitation in your body alignment and posture that can arise. And just tracking your breath in this moment. Just a full inhale and then an exhale. Now I'm just going to invite you to start doubling the length of your exhale. So no matter the length of your inhale, just doubling the length of your exhale and just finding and feeling your own heartbeat. I have just put my hand over my heart and my hand on my belly. So we're just activating our own touch on our own body and an awareness of our own breath and just calling in all parts of us here now. This is a co-creative conversation and just thanking all of the different elements and places and spaces that brought us here to co-create, whether you are listening or whether it's Maddie and I talking, there's reasons for all of us being here now. So just thanking the world, thanking communities, thanking body, thanking self, and just offering yourself, just before we complete this, just a little blessing or a little prayer or a little intention for your own health, your own well-being, your own capacity, your own energy. Okay. Beautiful.
I feel like I come roaring into these podcasts full of energy, and now I just want to have a nap.
And that's a beautiful indication of a system that was ready to have a nap that might have been hyperactivated. So can be very helpful arriving in the present moment. And you know what I brought in at the beginning, like allowing the slowest part of us to catch up, because we have these parts that move really fast, but we've also got parts of us that are like, oh, I'm not ready, or I don't want to do that, or whatever that inner conversation is. So sometimes just coming into the present moment create that harmonizing, and it's very powerful for our nervous system, for our hormones, for our breath rate, our digestion. Like there's a lot of benefits of arriving in the present moment. So it's a simple and easy practice, but not many people activate it often enough.
Oh, absolutely. And my late night with the boys watching Formula One at 2 a.m. probably didn't help either.
Well, if you had blue blocking glasses on, it would have been better. I don't know if you did.
I did not. There was many poor choices made on that night.
Perfect. You know what? And sometimes that is the most divine perfect choice that we can make at the time. Anyway, it's very nourishing.
It is.
Those kind of experiences.
Speaking of nourishing, we've had, like last time you were on, we had loads of questions and lots of people shared how amazing they thought you were, which you are. And so I think, you know, we've been going back and forth what to talk about next. And I love this idea of us talking through a normal day that sort of the common person listening would be having. And then we're going to dissect it a little and go through where things are maybe not ideal, or where maybe we're getting exposure to things that we're not thinking about. So like, I think let's do that. That's a cool idea.
Yeah. And I'll just preface this. So I'm going to describe a typical day that I'm presented with often by a new client that starts working with me. So this is like commonly found. And I just invite every person who's listening to just relate different aspects to them, their choices, and how they might be feeling. Because then when we unpack it, it'll be very relevant to you. And I also kind of want to preface this conversation with just reminding everyone, like, why on earth we're here, why are we listening to the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast, is because we want to be well. And one of the things I like to kind of just remember is that we're all wanting to make choices that increase our capacity for aliveness, for joy, for intimacy, for connection, for fun, for pleasure, for curiosity, for play. That's the purpose of life. And so when things have been adding up that take us away from that pathway and basically make us walk the pathway of chronic stress and overload and overwhelm, things are just nowhere near as fun and joyful. And that's why I like being able to open up a common routine and be like, if you want to stay playing in that space, you're going to get the same results that you've always had. You know, to create a change, there does have to be some different action steps taken. And some of them can be super simple, very attainable, and very achievable immediately. So I feel like that can be an important thing to know first.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think everybody can totally relate to that, because we're all here for fun, joy, happiness, all of the experiences. And I think most people listening can probably safely say they disproportionately have all of the shitty experiences, and that's why they're listening.
Yeah, we can always peg a conversation for nervous system later for another time. And let's start with a description. So I kind of want to bring it in a little bit to, I'll kind of start on the night before. So often people go to bed a little later than maybe what they were thinking. They might have been on their phone just checking reels, and they leave their Wi-Fi on. They'll hop into their room. Sometimes they don't shut the curtains because they're like, oh, I'm going to get up in the morning anyway. You know, their room might be quite warm because they've had a heater on. There's a couple of different things that they have not really thought about by the time they've hopped into bed. So then when they wake up, usually the first thing that happens when they wake up is they think, oh, shit, it's the morning. So
what a drainer.
There's often already a little bit of bracing against the day. Anyway, the day starting, your body moving. And often people lean over and grab their phone that has been plugged in next to their head or you know, on the floor all night, and turn it on. And they have a look at their phone. So they'll either scroll or check emails and kind of access their device for a little while. Then they might hop up out of bed, go to the bathroom, turn on the lights, then go to the kitchen, either turn on the lights or open the fridge, and often have a coffee, often not eat breakfast, not even hungry at all. And then, you know, we'll jump in the car or get the kids ready, then jump in the car. You know, like everyone's got different things going on in the morning, but there's usually like a bit going on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they might hop into the traffic. Maybe the sun isn't up yet, and so all the car lights are on. You know, they've got to be in stop-start traffic for a little while. They get to an office environment. Maybe there's another coffee. There's a lot of overhead lights. There's a lot of devices. There's a lot of plugged in tech. And then the day begins. Sometimes people then might be eating breakfast or a snack sitting in front of a device. So they're kind of on the go and they're eating and they're in front of some tech. And they might repeat that a couple more times during the day. Often they'll, you know, if people are calling them, they'll answer the phone. The phone will be like, you know, ear contact. The phone will be in the pocket. Phone will be in the handbag. If you move around, devices come with. Yeah, that's pretty typical. And so by the time people get home, often they actually realize that they're pretty hungry. And often then that's when overeating or eating things that maybe aren't serving us in our highest health come into play. Sometimes that might mean eating dinner, but then snacking later. So you might, you know, as a part of a wind down, maybe there's a glass of wine, maybe there's a binge watching of Netflix. And yeah, there might be a little bit of chocolate, a little bit of ice cream, a little bit of a sweet treat that comes to the end of the day. And then it kind of gets really late. You start feeling so tired, you can't really be bothered getting ready for bed and they need to lay it because it's like seems like such a hard effort. And then you finally go to bed and that whole process begins again. Does that sound pretty common, Maddie?
Yeah, I would say that sounds pretty common for sure. And yeah, it's interesting that delaying of going to bed because you don't want to do that dreadful cycle all over again. And then by delaying it, you're making it even worse.
Oh, I used to play that game. I know it very well.
Yeah, I did it at some point too.
I definitely was describing past versions of myself there when I offered that insight. So I'm deeply aware of the entrapment of habitual cycles and familiarity that we have with walking the same old path.
Yeah.
And again, you know, before I branch into dissecting some of these components, I will just say that our brain loves to conserve energy. That's its main job as a survival-based tool. So if it has the opportunity to pick the habitual habit, the familiar path, even if it's painful, it will pick the familiar path because it understands what energy requirements are required to meet that. It will often not want to pick the more unfamiliar path because it's unsure of what energy requirements might be needed to sustain that. And that's why we can often have those inner narratives that pop up and be like, oh, I don't need to do that now. Or, that's not important. Or oh, da, 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 da. Like all those little stories come up. And so sometimes it's nice to know that it's part of our brain energy conservation network that keeps us looping, you know?
Yeah. So it's so easy to get it fall into the narrative of just self-savagery and self-weakness. And so I think sometimes it can be a little bit helpful to understand, oh, it's sort of biology that feels, you know, like it's out of my control or was here a long time before I was. Brilliant. And I can harness it, by the way.
Yes, yes. And so let's dissect a little bit of this day that I just described. And so one of the things when I'm working with clients that I do like to talk about is actually how people go to sleep. So, you know, without even changing what time you're going to sleep, just shifting a couple of things in the bedroom before you go to sleep can be really important. One of the things that our body loves going to sleep is darkness. As dark as you can get your bedroom, your body will actually rest better and sleep better. Now, I also just want to create some clarity around this too. My body felt very unsafe for most of my life. So I used to sleep with the curtains open all the time and I hardly ever slept. Like I was a chronic insomniac for a really long time. I believed that I felt safer with the curtains open rather than closed. So I am aware that there might be some people out there that are like, oh, I just don't feel comfortable with that. And maybe it's time to have a little experiment, just experimenting with how much darker could you create, how much more darkness could you create in your sleeping environment? Because each extra 1% or 10% or 15% is going to make an extra 1 or 15 or 20% difference to your body being able to access more melatonin, but not just a deeper rest, but also more DNA repair, like repair of our cells that got damaged during the day. And so if we miss out on that deep rest and that beautiful melatonin secretion and those DNA repair programs, then you can imagine that if that was added up day after day after day after day, your body, how's it been repairing? It's going to struggle more and more. And that's why as you get older, you struggle more and more. So sometimes just changing the darkness status of your bedroom can be really important. The other thing that our body loves is cold. It loves feeling cold when it's sleeping. So around about 17 degrees, it can be cooler, but around about 17 degrees is kind of like the best temperature, the optimal temperature to really get a good rest. And having some air ventilation, so not having a stuffy room, obviously being able to have some air moving around. What else do you reckon our body would love at nighttime while we're sleeping is to not have EMF exposure, like to have as little device exposure as possible. So just in case, you know, some parts of the audience aren't aware, our body is an electromagnetic frequency beam, meaning that it runs off electricity and magnetism, and it has vibrations moving through it all of the time, from an atomic to an organism level. So it is impacted absolutely by the invisible, ubiquitous waves that, you know, travel information across our globe now. So as much distance as you can create between any of those devices, and your body will again be able to rest better, because it's basically not being interfered with by an invisible energetic force that is dysregulating. And so turning off a Wi-Fi router, and if you can't physically turn it off, I've suggested to my clients to set a timer. Like, that can be an easy thing to do. You can buy a timer from, you know, a hardware store and just set it up so it turns off at the same time every night. That could also be a great prompt to be like, I'm going to stop scrolling on Reels, or I'm going to stop watching Netflix now and hop into bed.
Yeah. I turn mine off every night and have done for years, and phone doesn't even enter the bedroom anymore. That's been going on for years. And the other thing I wanted to just go back on quickly is the darkness. So the super dark rooms were like transformative to me years ago. And now everywhere I move in, I basically glue the curtains to the wall so that it's super pitch black. But I've come across regularly two comments or sort of oppositions in some way to that idea. One is, we always had moonlight, so the moonlight, shouldn't that be, you know, shouldn't the light coming in be similar to moonlight? Or is there a problem with moonlight because we've had it for, you know, eternity? And the other thing is that people feel groggy when they wake up in pitch black darkness because they're not getting the light through the window that would naturally wake them up. So I'm thinking about some of the people listening that are like, oh, yeah, but.
So, yeah, I also know you can buy a sunrise, I think it's called, device that changes the lighting cues in your room in the morning. So if the grogginess and the pitch blackness is a concern for people, there are devices that can support that. I have also found for myself, the more regulated my circadian rhythm is, I always wake up before sunrise. Like, I just, my body is so in tune with the circadian rhythm of this earth, I cannot help but wake up because I have a normal cortisol awakening response. So if someone is still feeling really tired and groggy in the morning, I would suggest that there's still some cortisol dysregulation and melatonin production dysregulation going on there. And there's many different strategies that could support that unique individual. And so, was there another part? Oh, and moonlight. A full moon is reflecting, I think it's like 7 to 8% of the sunlight. So it can seem like it's incredibly strong light. However, it's not necessarily classified as such a significant amount that it would create significant melatonin suppression. I also am aware that ancestrally, like evolutionarily, human beings wouldn't really have been sleeping outside in the fields because it would make you a really great attack target for a nocturnal animal. And so we would have been in caves or secreted away somewhere, not necessarily out in full moonlight. So I think there are a number of different factors there that make a lot of sense to me. Do you feel like that was enough of an answer?
Yeah, that makes plenty of sense to me. I already know some people I'm going to send this podcast episode to. So thank you for confirming what I've already told them.
Fantastic. And I also, a handy hint for people who travel and, you know, would be staying in hotel rooms where they don't have a lot of, I guess, control over the curtains and the lighting, is I know that if you can have a little water bottle and spray water as the tensioner on the window, and you can just buy some alfoil, you can black out your room using alfoil on the windows and have the curtains behind. And for some people who haven't been in charge of their own environment, including their own EMF environment, that one strategy has been helpful enough to create some regulation in their system.
Amazing. I like it. All right. So that's the bedroom. Like, what's next?
So the bedroom, so the nighttime setup, so minimizing EMF exposure. And I know that you said that you don't normally sleep next to your phone at nighttime, but most people that I talk to still take their phone into their bedroom, have their phone plugged in next to them. Maybe they turn it on airplane mode, like as their technique to support them, which is one technique. You certainly could try some more techniques that take that device even further away from you and has even less impact on you. And that's what I would suggest. So maybe even going back to old school alarm clocks. Who knew?
Yes. That's always the argument. Everybody says, Maddie, but I use it as my alarm clock.
Sure, and that's why I like to address it, because I've heard there's not many arguments that I haven't heard at this stage.
Of course,
I feel like I can confidently answer each one of them with a solution that honestly works. I also have had my phone in a room far away from me, but set on a high volume with the alarm, like the sound that I could hear. And maybe some people aren't as sound sensitive, but that's another strategy. But certainly the old style alarm clocks, they work.
Yes. I actually have one of those sunrise alarm clocks where the light comes on first before the sound comes on, and the type of sound you can sort of choose, but I always pick like chill meditation music because I'm not really a fan of that whole massive cortisol injection with the old alarm clock sounds of just, you know, brutal, really loud sounds. Agreed. And I'm like, oh my God, what's going on? You know, I just like waking up and I'm like, oh, it's a new day. How lovely.
Yeah. So I feel like that is a beautiful strategy, and our body is literally designed to respond to those cues of light. And so let's come back into often the first thing that people do, apart from the bracing patterns. As I said, I'll peg that for another conversation another day if that's where people want to go. But if you wake up and the first thing that you do is turn on your phone, number one, that's a lot of EMF exposure coming straight at your brain, coming straight at your thyroid, both of which have a lot to do with your energy, your capacity, your metabolism, your ability to get through the day. But you would be looking at that phone quite close to your face, and that is shining a light signal into your eyes that is already creating a cascade of information to say that it's midday. Now, I'm sure that each of us is very keenly aware that we're a very different person at 7 a.m. than we are at 7 p.m. Like by the end of the day, we're a very different person. And in the morning, we would like to be a certain way. And so just shifting that signal for hours later, again, like without needing to explain all the physiology, I'm sure that most people could imagine that that's quite a different landscape that your body's internally having to navigate through. Externally, it's the morning, but internally, here we are and it's midday. The other thing about shining a light, a blue, like chronic blue light exposure in that particular wavelength to our eyes, is that we're also utilizing a lot of vitamin A and DHA, dopamine, in our eyes to transmit a lot of that signaling. And that signaling then, because we're utilizing so many of those ingredients there, for me, not that I've been able to link this to a specific scientific paper that studied it, but I'm like, if you're using a lot of ingredients in this area, it does mean that you're going to have less of those ingredients elsewhere. Your body will have to pull those resources in, whether it's from your gut lining or your skin or parts of your brain, to continue to serve the place of our body that's basically under the most attack at that time. Because light is very helpful for our system unless it's done in too much of a chronic exposure in a very specific bandwidth of light.
Yeah, that's a really great share. I really like that.
Amazing. And so there's all of this signaling cascade that's happening through our eyes, but then it's impacting our brain regions that's telling different parts of our body then what to do next. And so, as I said before, like there's going to be a lot of signaling that's very different at 12 than or midday than it would be at 7 a.m. in the morning. So we should get a pretty, you know, significant rise in cortisol in the morning as our melatonin is going down. And instead, what most people are doing is having a very sharp cortisol rise, which takes a lot of nutrients. And so one of the things that happens when we make a lot of cortisol and a lot over time is that it will take resources for itself to be made, and it will leave other parts of our body, you know, without. And other parts of our body that go without will tend to be our sex steroid hormones. So our reproductive cycle, our sex drive, and even our cognitive function, our muscle repair ability, like they're all going to be impacted by cortisol basically being like, I am needed the most, so all of you can just get in line. You don't get to have anything that you need right now because so much cortisol needs to be here.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, especially with, I don't know if it's just my world and the bias of the fact that I work with women generally above the age of 40, but it seems like perimenopause is just getting earlier and earlier, and all of the complications that come with that and menopause seem to be getting worse and worse. And I would hazard a guess that a long-term exposure to ongoing stress that prioritizes cortisol and adrenaline development and sacrifices you know, progesterone, estrogen, testosterone creation is possibly informing that terrible menopause experience.
Totally. And I also will again link this into our thyroid axis, which I haven't spoken about. And our thyroid axis, you know, like a lot of people understand that that's happening at, you know, kind of our throat level where that gland is. However, the signaling that sets off that cascade is also in our brain. And when we have a significant stress response, it takes a lot of cortisol that's impacting our reproductive hormones. It will automatically impact our thyroid hormones. The three of them work in a little triad. If one of that triad is out of sync, out of whack, like in excess or in deficiency, so will the others be impacted in their own way. So instead of being a stable kind of triangular foundation, you end up just being kind of all over the shop and finding regulation. I am certainly aware that even from my like old versions of me practitioner lens, I'd be like, well, let's work on your stress hormones and your adrenal function, or, you know, I'll work on this specifically. And I had not understood for quite a long time how significantly the light story controls, or like, not just significantly, it is the controller of our hormonal milieu, like our hormonal cascade. And so if you miss that, you're never quite rectifying the root cause that is going to continue to shift that cascade in ways that are unhelpful for your system.
And I think in the stress conversation, and I know that we're going to do another nervous system one, but most people are focused on becoming stress-proof, right? Instead of actually finding ways to reduce the cortisol and adrenaline in their body, they're like, train me to be able to take more.
Yeah, I actually was having this conversation with someone the other day about how sometimes the best strategy is to work out what can I take away from my current life? Like, what can I remove rather than add in?
Yeah,
we're all,
I like it.
I've never met a person that doesn't feel over full in some way, like juggling a lot, thinking about a lot, wanting to achieve a lot, like feeling like they're not enough, you know, like the scarcity mindset. Like, there's all different ways in which we feel like we're over full, or we don't kind of have capacity for, or we're not able to do and live our dreams the way that we want. And so sometimes it's literally just as simple but hard as saying, what is it that I can release? What's one thing that I can let go of? As we let go of things, can you imagine then that there's more space for you to arrive? Like, more of you can show up in your, and then that's when you can more authentically claim, this is actually my wants, my needs, my desires. This is actually, I need to prioritize my body in this way, rather than prioritizing a mindset, a belief about I'm not enough and I have to keep doing the thing.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think that the other thing is, and this is maybe another conversation for another day. We could have so many conversations. Oh my
God. Many.
But like, a lot of the modern world and social media and sugar and all of those things, it's fundamentally, we're just perpetually escaping ourselves. And so I think a lot of people have a fear of finding themselves again, or seeing themselves, or allowing more of themselves, because that person is either a stranger or it's an uncomfortable reality.
Totally. I mean, you and I were just briefly discussing before we hopped on here, just, you know, like my story of, like, I grew up in an environment where I didn't understand that I really even was allowed to have needs. Like, you know, like it was a kind of a dysregulated growing up environment, and, you know, we didn't have a lot of money, and it was chin up but a cup, which basically means whatever you're feeling, put it aside and just keep moving on. And to some, you know, various aspects, I think all of us have learnt different conditions, very unconscious to us in our childhood, where we minimize the truth of who we are, what we want, and how we want to express. And that manifests over and over again in our adult life until we unlearn those conditions and those beliefs and relearn our authenticity. And that's a practice. And that's why I've done so much nervous system work and somatic understanding. And even saying that, like, I've loved working through the body lens of the body and opening up people's nervous system capacity. And this circadian biology piece, this light wavelength piece, for me, I realized how foundational that is. So I could continue to do nervous system work, but if people were getting the incorrect light cues, their nervous system was always over capacity.
And
so that's why
I've,
you know, wind it back and let's find ways in which we can help your nervous system feel more available for more life and more of you to arrive. You can be more present because you're not as stressed out. When we're stressed, we cannot help but anticipate threats in the future that haven't yet arrived, or think about threats that happened in the past. Like, we're not present in the moment. And so, yeah, And honestly, it is truly a light story. The light inside of us, the light outside of us, the light that we're ingesting through our food, all of these light cues are interacting to change how our nervous system is responding to cues of safety or danger.
Yeah, totally. Well, and I mean, let's continue on with that day. Speaking of light exposure.
So we have the phone in front of our face. That phone, because we're using a lot of dopamine here, it doesn't necessarily mean that there is a direct interaction between then the dopamine production in the brain. But as I said, if we're utilizing a lot of dopamine in our eyes, it's going to leave a lot less ingredients to make dopamine in our neuronal networks in our brain. And neurotransmitters are the same as hormones. If our dopamine levels are out of sync, so will our serotonin levels be, so will our GABA and glutamate and acetylcholine, and all of the neurotransmitters also work in a beautiful symphony orchestra, same as our hormones. And so there are then changes that happen in our neuronal landscape of what parts of our brain do we have access to. Because our body is viewing this as kind of unconsciously, you wouldn't know that this was a threat response basically happening in front of you, but our body is viewing this as a threat. We're getting a lot of blue light exposure. It's too much, too soon, and I don't have any particular way of decreasing it. And your heart rate would go up a little bit. Your contractions in your muscles would change. There would be a little bit of stiffening and bracing. When you have those body patterns displaying unconsciously inside of you, it has to change the way that you interact in your next steps, whether you are interacting with another being, whether that's an animal or a human, whether you're interacting with food, whether you're interacting, you know, like finding an innovative idea for work, like you just won't have the same capacity when your body's in more of a defensive posture than it would be if it was more open because it's under less threat. Does that also make sense?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
The other thing that I also just want to, before we move away from the phone being so close to our eyes, I know I've spoken specifically about the eyes. They are very pivotal in the light story, obviously, but our skin also, the best way to imagine it is that it's also covered in lots of little eyes, little opsins that are also receiving these light cues. And so for women particularly, think about it, our skin is thinner than men's skin. Like that's just the typical woman has definitely less skin thickness than a man, which means that we're going to be much more affected by blue light. And for all the women out there that would like to age really well, then that's a problem. And it's not just the aging component, it's the oxidative stress that's, you know, happening through our eyes and through our skin that, again, require nutrients. Oxidative stress is another word for inflammation or chaos in the body. You can imagine that, again, I'll try and make an analogy. If you walked into your own house and it was chaotic, like there was just stuff everywhere and you had to fix it, and it's going to take time. It's going to take your energy. That's a little bit like what oxidative stress and inflammation are in your body. It's going to take time and it's going to take energy. Where are you getting those resources from if you just continue to make similar decisions moment after moment?
Yeah. Mum, mother, grandmother, nan, nana, and women with no kids. Have I got your attention? So I want you to imagine something. Go with me here. Imagine a life where even when you wake up tired and the kids are driving you mad and work sucks and things are problematic, that you're still in control of your food and you still make healthy choices without giving up and binging on chocolate and wine and saying, "I'll try again tomorrow." It might be hard to imagine, but having freedom with your food is absolutely possible. And it starts by getting three things right. One, having a supportive community, building a strong connection with fellow emotional eating warriors. Two, having the right information delivered in the right way. And three, having a guide that can shine a light on the right path and have your back along the way. And that's me. Those three things are exactly what we've got for you inside the Healthy Mums Collective Facebook group for people just like you wanting to end their emotional eating and feel good in their own skin again. And currently, it's free to join. The link is in the show notes below. If you've struggled with diets or felt powerless around food, you're not alone. But let me assure you, this is a community that understands your battles and is ready to empower you into action. So what can you expect on the inside? Well, we have posts and content that push you a little out of your comfort zone. We do Facebook Lives, have interactive Q&A session, and it's simply a safe space to face your food challenges and be honest without concern of being judged. If you decide to join us, I have a complimentary How to Turn Food into Self-Confidence ebook for you as well, completely free. The Healthy Mums Collective thrives on support, authenticity, and experience-based practices. It's a community, so the beautiful people in it is where the magic comes from. To join us and be a part of that magic, head to the show notes, click the link, breeze through a few quick questions, and you'll be in the Healthy Mums Collective before you know it. Again, the link is in the show notes below. I'll see you in the DMs or on the welcome post in just a few moments. Next, we've got we've left the bedroom.
Left the bedroom and we switched on the overhead light in the bathroom. And so this is where I want to bring in the angle of the light. And like your sunrise device in your room, I would imagine it's on the floor or somewhere lower down. The angle of the light that's coming into our body, if you think about the sun rising and then hitting midday and then coming all the way to dusk, there are particular angles that is related to that sun exposure. And so if we are turning on overhead lights, our eyes are sensing the position of those lights. And again, it's another layering cue to say, oh, the sun's very much up. It is above my head. So if there is a possibility to only have low lights on and very warm tone lights, like in the morning, I would be suggesting, you know, yellow or orange or red lights to be low, a lot like dawn or dusk light would be. During the later parts of the day, sure, if you have to have the overhead lights on, turn them on. There's going to be much less impact to your circadian clock biology at that time. So the angle of the light is really important, as is the brightness. I do understand that there are people who are like, I want to put my makeup on and I want to do that. Sure. If it's something that it's a non-negotiable, pick the non-negotiable thing. Like, I'm not going to freak out. It's just more like, in what ways can we work with your current routine to optimize it in a way that's super supportive, where your body's like, oh my God, thank you. Thank you for acknowledging my needs with the light wavelengths.
Yeah. I guess everything you just described about turning those overhead lights on just goes all day until you fall asleep, right?
Totally. And so when you look at the layering effect, you can understand why there's so much dysregulation in our world. And although I haven't really spoken so much about it yet, like, this is why there's so many people who are overweight, that are depressed, that have anxiety. Like, with this level of chronic light exposure at all, like all of the different angles that are incorrect for us, and with none of the complementary wavelengths of light that should be associated when we are receiving light, our body has no chance to regulate. It has no chance to repair. Like, it just cannot. And we're always going to have some people who are more exquisitely sensitive than others. Like, some people are just much more sensitive to EMF exposure and light exposure than others. So some people can get away with it for a lot longer. But when I look around the world now, I see kids that are surrounded by devices and lights, and I know what a huge difference that's making to their nervous system development, to their cognitive function. And these are going to be our next leaders. It concerns me, let alone the populations of people now and the rates of infertility. And, you know, I couldn't go on. Like, I don't want to create a doom and gloom picture. What I'm wishing to create is an awareness of literally how easy it can be once you have some strategies to start implementing it. I don't really feel like it's a huge habit change. It's literally just becoming more aware of the angle of the light, the brightness of the light, and in what ways can I mitigate the light coming into my system.
Yeah.
So one of the big things with light also, even in a dark room, if you think about opening a fridge, when I bring this up with my clients, it's a huge thing. So obviously, like, there's the emotional components of I'm picking a food thing next, and food is a very emotional, very unique, personalized experience for each person. Depends on so many different factors. So again, I'll park that for a nervous system conversation one day. But when we open that fridge, we are getting another big burst of light onto our skin, through our eyes. We close the fridge and then we begin to eat. Because we've already had so much blue light exposure at this stage, what we also have is insulin dysregulation, which means that doesn't matter what we eat, we are going to have more issues absorbing and utilizing that food. We're going to have more sugar in our system. It's much easier to have insulin resistance. It's so much easier for then that sugar to be converted into your adipocytes, your fat cells. And so even if you choose the healthiest breakfast of all time for you, that breakfast food is not going to be utilized the same way that you would think it should be utilized in your system. Your body's not able to receive it as well as what it could if those light cues were different. Does that make sense, Maddie?
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. And I think, you know, I keep going back to nervous system stuff, but then you add on the stress and the gut's not necessarily switched on, or it's in fight or flight, and your stomach acid's stimulated in the wrong way. And then you're getting even less nutritional extraction from what's going in.
Totally. And when we reverse this story and we talk about like the regulated things that can happen, it'll make sense as to why. Well, in fact, I might just say it now. So part of those circadian clock mechanisms would be also to set up not just our digestive secretions and our digestive hormones, but also even the detoxification enzymes that help us work with the food components that are coming in. Because we don't use all of those food components that come in. Some of those food components do stress out our system and they do need to be excreted or metabolized. And so having all of those different pathways engaged can only happen when we have the right light cues. They cannot happen when we're under chronic blue light exposure. And that's why you could be ticking all the boxes for like, but look, I'm so healthy. I'm doing all the things and I'm not getting the results that I should be. Well, this is time now to start really addressing circadian biology, because that's underneath all of those things. It's underneath the food. It's underneath the exercise.
It's the core of everything.
In my perspective, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's mine too. Mine too.
It's, yeah, I mean, the link is between mitochondria and water as well in our system. Like you cannot, you know, pick them apart. And our microbiomes. Like I haven't really spoken much about our microbiomes, but light exposure changes our microbiomes from skin to within.
Yeah.
So anyway, so then when people do have a coffee, obviously then that's another spike of cortisol and adrenaline, and there's even more dysregulation that then, you know, we're hopping into the car, we're driving. If people have got their headlights on, there's a huge amount of LED. And if you look at all the new cars that are out now, their LED lighting is, I consider, dangerous.
Yeah, it is. I agree. It's distracting. It's overwhelming to look at. So you can't it's really see anything in front of you.
Because it's so overwhelming, again, I just want to remind everyone, there is an unconscious threat response happening in your system. Like your body will actually be trying to protect itself against that level of brightness, that intensity, and depending on the duration. So there will be unconscious bracing patterns that result. And if you're not aware of that, or if that's a day after occurrence, your body is carrying that imprint with you. And again, it's very hard to release a defensive imprint when your body's constantly getting cues saying, I need to defend myself. Like there's so much threat happening here. So part of my passion project at the moment is going to be speaking at, you know, schools and different events. And I've got it on my little information booklet in creating awareness around maybe we can create some legislation changes at some time, looking at, you know, lights, looking at lighting in public environments, and public environments include our road environments. So I do believe that they are incredibly dangerous and very terrible for metabolic health.
Yeah. You could even argue, though, the opposite is necessary, which is that those lights keep people awake enough so they don't crash. Because I did the whole change all my globes to red globes, or globes that I can change the color of. And the nervous system and your response, you feel physically much more subdued, much more chill. So if you've got people on the road that are feeling more chill, maybe at night you're going to have more crashes.
I mean, I'd be curious to look at the stats on that for sure. I mean, there would be some statistical measures, I guess, that we could compare. Some, like, I don't know exactly what year those new LED lights were brought out, but that would be an interesting comparison.
Yeah.
I personally, like from my own driving history, I felt much safer on the roads when the lights were less bright.
Oh, me too, completely.
So I think it's interesting. And so then when people arrive in their workspace environment, or say if they go to gym, so they also know that if you go to gym and you're, you know, underneath overhead lights that are in the blue light spectrum, you are not going to get, you will be bright and cognitively alert. They do know that's one of the things that happens under bright blue light exposure. However, again, your cortisol response will be higher and your exercise recovery will be more poor. And I feel like you just will not be able to reap the benefits of your exercise routine in the same way that you could if it wasn't under bright artificial overhead lights. So then if you arrive at the office, this is, again, like the layering effect of EMF, because it's invisible and because we can't tangibly feel it, it's a very ignored but very significant part of health and of nervous system capacity. So if everyone in the office has their own mobile phone device, and imagine, say, I'll just for imagination's sake, just imagine that the radius of intensity around them is a meter, but then you've got 20 people in the office and then you've got all of their laptops plugged in and the printers. So you add in all of these electromagnetic fields and your body's sitting there receiving those invisible signals. And we are full of magnetic, paramagnetic, diamagnetic substances that, even though science says that they only respond to strong fields, it's a pretty strong field that we're sitting in. And there's been no long-term studies done on the layering effects of these kind of workplace environments or school environments, community-based environments. And certainly the thermal regulation rules related to a lot of these devices are so out of date and have not been readdressed. And the onus has not been put upon like the 5G rollout towers to prove how safe they are. Rather, it's been up to the naysayers to prove how unsafe it is. But we don't have any long-term studies on the layering effect of these kind of electromagnetic waves. So just as another kind of point of interest that I wanted to share with people, because it's something that not everyone thinks about, because we just accept that, you know, our councils and our government and legislation is supporting our health and well-being. I absolutely do not believe that. I believe that there's a lot of people who are uninformed who also kind of believe the same thing, and they sign off on things that they haven't really thought about or have very little physiological or psychological understanding of.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because not too long ago, I'm not sure if you saw it in the news, and I'm not someone that actually watches news, but it made my way to my phone at some point. But Williamstown City Council here in Melbourne, whichever council that falls under, they were challenged in court to prove that 5G towers do not cause damage to human health and biology, and they could not prove that in court. They could not prove that.
Totally. And this is part of why I want to build this information kit, just to arm people with that kind of information. It is possible, and they overturned the building of that tower in that suburb. And I do not believe that we should be compliant. I do not believe the onus is, the responsibility is on the people who create the towers and whoever decides to put the towers in on that property or that space, to prove how safe it is for you, your families, your children. And I understand that our modern society is very heavily invested in technology and in easy access. And I also am aware that we are sicker than we've ever been before. And so it is coming to a time where we have to choose, do I want my health, my well-being, and my energy, and to feel really good in the skin that I'm in and to be able to live my life with confidence and vitality? Or do I want really fast communication and effects that they're not going to understand for another 25 years? Like, cancer rates are increasing astronomically. Like, there's lots of different reasons why these things are interplaying, like obesity, childhood obesity, type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease, kidney disease, liver disease, all of our highest mitochondrial organs, neurodegenerative disease. They are all linked to our high EMF exposure and high device exposure. They both go hand in hand, artificial light and devices generally. And the double layering is very impactful for our system. And we've just kind of taken it on really blindly. And now we need to really take off those blindfolds. We need to lift up the veil and start getting real about the significant difference that light is making. We can either get right light, or we can get right long. Right, light, wrong. I'm not going to say that again. You all know what I mean. Optimize your light and get the right life. That's basically what I wanted to say.
All right, so people are at work. They've driven their car. They're at work. They're sitting in front of screens, all this tech all day, and now they're eating in front of the tech.
Yeah, eating in front of the tech. And again, I already brought it up at the breakfast time thing, but you will have insulin dysregulation, and that's just going to be another layer to that. Again, I just want to point out, it's not just the insulin dysregulation. It's not just the sugar dysregulation. All of these other things are happening inside your joints, in your collagen. Like, there are little products that attach on to different pieces of you that aren't meant to. And that's part of what creates accelerated aging and inflammation and sore joints. And so this is why even creating a food choice, it does help people be more mindful, where they, even if you at the minimum shut the laptop, if you can be outside, that is preferential. If you can't be outside, I have another strategy that can help as well. Do you want me to talk about that now, strategies, or now I just brought it up.
Yeah, that's so, it. Go for it.
They have done studies to show that if we have red or infrared light wavelengths, which are always naturally occurring via sunlight, infrared and red wavelengths take up 50% or over of the proportion of all natural light from dawn till dusk, all day, every day. Doesn't matter whether you're in sun, shade, anywhere. So we always have access to red and infrared light. in natural light. If you cannot get natural light, you can make amends in some small way. And I don't want to overemphasize how, like, this is not a biohack that gets you out of natural light. You know, it's a helpful hack if you really have no other option. And if you really have no other option, then it's worthy of your consideration. Like, what does no other option truly mean for your longevity on this planet and how well you get to live your life? And so you can put a red or infrared device somewhere on your body, but at the back of your body, if that light was shining on the back of your skin, and eat your food at the same time, your insulin regulation will improve by about 30%. So that's a significant enough difference.
Yeah.
That if you really had to support yourself in some way and you could not avoid blue light exposure, at least having some red and infrared light wavelengths around you will help support that. That also runs true for if you happen to be in an office where there's just, you know, constant blue light everywhere, just having a panel on you, around you, near you, throwing some infrared and red light out as wavelengths into your atmosphere will support your body in some way. I have many times sat here at my device when I've had a long day with people. Like, if I can take my laptop outside, that's always where I am. However, sometimes if I'm having meetings like this, I've got a lot of noise around my house and I really have to sit here in this space, and I'll have an infrared or red light panel on my tummy or on my legs or on my knees. I always have one at the back of my body. I'm sitting on a bio mat. So there are different ways in which we can at least allow a little bit of infrared light or red light to combat the chronicity of the blue, because that's what we would naturally have if we were out in sunlight. Like, the height of the day, we have a lot of blue light, but at all times of the day, there's always some levels of blue, but always over 50% red and infrared. So that's why we do have some tech at our disposal that is helpful to some degree. And again, it doesn't contain all of the different wavelengths in that near and far infrared spectrum. It doesn't contain all of the wavelengths of red light. So there are aspects that you're still missing out on, let alone, you know, the colors of the rainbow that come in the light all the time.
Yeah, of course. Of course. So we've been eating in front of our devices. I guess then we repeat the cycle, right?
Oh, go home, but also eating late. So what I haven't spoken about yet that also interferes with our clock rhythmicity, like, it loves natural light, but the second most powerful entrainer of our clock rhythmicity, our food timing, the quality and quantity of our food, and of course our microbiome. So the impact of that food on our microbiome and of course our nervous system impact on our microbiome, they are all going to dictate what happens also with our clock. So light is the number one entrainer. Number two is the timing of food intake. So preferentially, like, we get an insulin rise in the morning. So preferentially, I was talking with my client about this just before our session, actually. You know, there's that old saying, eat like a king in the morning, eat like a prince at lunch, and eat like a pauper for dinner. That actually is very aligned to circadian biology in terms of our, you know, the hormonal cascade that our body is expecting. So we will have more insulin in the morning and at lunchtime than we will in the afternoon and evening. So eating bigger meals with high satiety, like high fat, high protein at breakfast and lunch, is going to be much more helpful for your system than having a high fat, high protein, high carb meal later on in the day, because you just have less hormones to work with that evolutionarily. That's not what our body was expecting. It's only really since humans have been in charge of their own lighting that we've had access to that, and also access to food components that are nowhere near region-specific, locality-specific. So that's my other point. So when you eat, you're kind of setting up a rhythm for the timing of the clock. So if you're eating within a circadian time frame, that's awesome. So say that might be for breakfast, like an hour and a half after you've first woken up, like about 90 minutes, you know, an hour to 2 hours after you've woken up, that's a pretty ideal window for eating. Eating immediately upon waking, sometimes you miss some of the fasting benefits that are still flowing in your body. You're still in a little bit of a ketogenic phase. So, you know, not immediate eating, but that little bit of time where you've had a little bit of movement, like the cortisol is rising, all of the other hormones can kind of kick in. Then you eat, you've got plenty of insulin if your circadian rhythm is adapted, and you will have a much better response to that food from your detoxification enzymes, your microbiome communities, just, yeah, everything works better in that regard. if you are eating meals at timing that's not suitable for circadian entrainment, and that basically means eating late at night, snacking all day, if we don't give our system a bit of a rest in between meals, it makes it really hard for it to have all the right ingredients to keep digesting things. There's also not very much regulation for our nervous system. Our nervous system loves regulation. It loves to know what to expect and when to expect it. And if we're just kind of eating at random interval times, it's very hard on our system for a number of different reasons, but it's also quite confusing for our clocks. Like, we've got a whole lot of clocks in our tummy that are like, oh God, she's eating again now already. I wonder what time it is. Like, basically they're kind of running around that whole time when you're eating all day going, what time is it? What time is it? What time is it? And then if you've got blue light, they're like, is that the time? I don't know. Is that the time? And so you can, again, imagine the chaos, the inflammation that's going to be in the system at that time. When we're eating after the sun has gone down, basically, after the sun goes down, our system goes down. So that's, you know, in a really beautiful way, I'm meaning to say that. Like, it's a softening time. It's a gentle, like, that's when we're moving into nourishment, nurture, sleep, restorative, repair, rejuvenate phase. And so, again, if we're continuing to eat, that does raise our cortisol and it changes our clock rhythmicity. Like, we're not going to be releasing melatonin in such a organized way because our cortisol levels will still be elevated. Often people, again, will be having that food underneath bright overhead or still on artificial lights. And so you get,
and
again,
Netflix.
And so there's the dysregulation that just comes from the light cues plus the dysregulation from the food timing that's after dark. I also just want to mention here that there's a really amazing app called the Circadian app that you can set up where you live and it will, it knows what time the sun comes up, what time the sun goes down. It will make suggestions around meal timing. The Circadian app is very helpful for people who want to just start working within an understanding of the rhythms of their own location.
It'll nice. Also, I'll put a link to that down in the show notes.
Oh, amazing. The other app that I love creating awareness around is the D-Minder app. And the D-Minder app.
That one.
Yeah, it just helps, again, people know when the best times are to go outside with, you know, whatever skin showing that you've got. You can change all the parameters, you know, that you can describe to the app so the app can help you work out what you need to do in terms of your sun exposure to get the most vitamin D if there's some around in your current location. It'll also help tell you when UVA rise is, and I haven't spoken about that yet, but UVA rise is a very important time for our hormonal cascade signaling. And this is, again, when I'm working with clients, I love to bring in this understanding that the transition times of dawn and dusk are very powerful light times. I'm sure, you know, we've all experienced like the potency, the magic of a dawn and a dusk, but it's also potent and magic for like the signaling in our system. But it's when the sun's about 10 degrees above the horizon to when it's about 30 degrees above the horizon. It's called the UVA rise time, when we have our bare skin and bare eyes showing. That means no contacts, no glasses, no sunglasses. That's when the signaling through our skin and our eyes sets up the shifts in our hormones and our neurotransmitters. So the dawn time, the dusk time is very important, but that UVA rise window in the morning, I will take whatever time people can give me. 2 minutes is what I've found is like the most basic amount of time that seems to make a difference. But
yeah, right.
Any time longer than that. So whatever, in whatever ways you can get outside, in whatever location that you're at, it doesn't matter whether you're in the sun, in the shade, that doesn't matter. As long as you're in the wavelengths of natural light that are outside, with as much of your body being able to receive that as possible, and particularly through your eyes. If you do wear contacts, you can take a little contact container with you, and literally it's worth you slipping them off your eyes even for a short amount of time. People who wear glasses and people who wear contacts don't have UVA signaling or UV light coming through those glasses. And that is a problem for that person. You cannot get the same hormonal signaling cascade, like the sequencing of events that are meant to happen naturally, not just through your hormones, but also your neurotransmitters. So your body is much less supported than it would like to be. And so you can change that. If you've got glasses on, they're obviously easy to take off. If it's dangerous for you to move around because you really can't see well, just stand in one spot, lean your back against a wall or a tree preferentially, sit down on the ground if it's a park. And, yeah, if you've got the contacts, if you can take a container with you so that you can slip them out and then pop them back in, that will help change your life in amazing ways.
Yeah, I like how this walking through the day has highlighted just how much EMF exposure and light exposure that is not natural we're exposed to. And I think that it's so easy to dismiss because we can't really see it. We can't necessarily always feel it either. I mean, everybody's had that time where they get off the screen and they're like, oh, my eyes, I feel so tired and I just can't focus. And as somebody, you know, maybe like yourself that works a lot on screens, I'm hyper aware of that now. But yeah, I think people just think that originally that it was just cognitive burnout from being focused and working, when it was actually the onslaught of all of these photons that are getting thrown at our face.
Yeah, and through our eyes. And it is dehydrating. And I haven't spoken about water yet, and I'm not going to today, but that level of dehydration is not just significant for our cognitive function, but for all of the way that cells communicate and ingredients around in our system. It's the water component is actually pretty huge. The last thing that I want to say just about UV exposure is even in the middle of the day, that's when we would normally have UVB come out. And obviously that's the highest blue light exposure time. My suggestion for people is, what they've recognized is that if we have that UVB light on our abdomen and on our calves, I'm aware that not everyone wants to flash their abdomen, you know, in some environments, but calves are usually a pretty safe place. If you can get your calves in the sun, you will also get an amplification of the most optimal hormonal cascades occurring through your skin pathways that support your body. If you have microbiome dysregulation, if you've got gut dysfunction in some way, shape or form, the more natural light you can get on your belly and the more red and infrared light, the better your belly will be. That's just one strategy, but it certainly does make a difference. They know that UVB light exposure in our skin can change our microbiome communities. It's a bit like, and there's a lot more studies coming out around light wavelengths and their interactions through our skin inside of our gut.
Will going to an infrared sauna produce a similar effect?
Yeah, similar-ish. And you're also getting some detoxification things that are happening there. I guess my only, you know, caveat on a detoxification pathway is someone's like detoxification pathways are overchunked. Like if they are pretty sedentary, they don't move much and they're dehydrated, moving into an infrared sauna is not my favorite thing. Same as like suggesting an ice bath. Like it's just if your system's already pretty tapped out, I feel like picking the right thing for your system is really important. And that's why working with a practitioner who understands what they're talking about can be very important. So someone that really isn't feeling that optimized in their health, the less regulated your system is, the more I would suggest that natural light is your preferential course of action. And then, of course, if you need to pick devices to support you, I probably would move more towards the panels first and then to the saunas, simply because that system, in my opinion, wouldn't be set up to really detox well through the skin, because their gut and their liver is going to be very inflamed, their kidney, you know what I mean? Like then they're not going to be able to utilize that skin pathway very well, and it might stress their system out.
Yeah, I like it. So I'm wondering if we could just kind of do a wrap up, kind of a list of all of the suggestions we've made. So we want to get the phone out of the bedroom. We want to turn Wi-Fi off at night. We want to get rid of the phone from charging next to our head, and therefore it's not there when we wake up and stare straight into it first thing in the morning. What next?
We want to be outside first thing in the morning and just be really wary of the overhead lights, the angle of the lights that you're working with. If you cannot get outside, please crack open the window. That's the same as if you're in your car. I also am a big fan of being a little bit colder rather than being a bit warmer. It's much better for our body's health and flexibility and adaptability. So just cracking open a window at least lets some wavelengths of light in. Mm-hmm. I don't think I mentioned this, but if we're behind windows all day, windows block infrared light because they're so energy efficient. They're energy efficient for the building, but not energy efficient for us. Like it completely wrecks our system, but for the building, it saves them money. And so behind glass, we have a blue light enriched environment because it's visible light coming in, with none of the complementary wavelengths. So if you are in a window environment, if you can open the window, it will be better for you than if you can't open the window.
Yeah, good. I like it. And then we want to get outside to eat our lunch.
Yes, if you can be outside to eat your breakfast, lunch and or dinner, that is going to be most helpful for your body system and the way that your body finds even better regulation with that food. Plus, you will, in my opinion, get much better regulation through your microbiome communities, because when we have more contact time with outside air, particularly in our local environments, there is a lot of communication happening again on an invisible level between the low microbiome communities that's often not recognised or thought about, but that's happening. The time of best access for any person any day is going to be when the sun's about 10 degrees above the horizon to about 30 degrees above the horizon. That's called UVA rise, and that will do the most for you fastest, basically. But basically, as much skin as you can get in the game as possible, whenever possible, is going to be helpful. Just always remembering that if you have been a chronic sunglass wearer and you still are in the sunshine, it does make it easier to burn faster. I also do, again, I haven't read I can't find a scientific paper for this, but it does make sense to me that if we are blocking wavelengths of light coming through our eyes, we are going to find blue light much more responsive in our skin. I believe it creates more oxidative stress, and I believe that's one of the reasons why we're still seeing high rates of basal cell and squamous cell carcinomas and melanomas, even though most people spend most of their time inside under no light. So I think it's the blue light exposure. So sunglasses will make a difference. Prescription glasses make a difference. Contact lenses make a difference. So whatever you can take off your eyes to have bare eyes and bare skin showing is the best.
Yeah, amazing. And I definitely want to come back and do a whole podcast on UV light, light exposure and cancers. And I think a lot of people will be extremely interested in that conversation.
Most people will be shocked. Yeah. I've tried to, because I had come from a skin therapy background, I've shared a little bit on some of the beauty therapy forums. There's a lot of skin and beauty therapists and dermatologists that are just not caught up with the most recent scientific literature and have zero understanding of the importance of light to support skin health. If it's done correctly, if it's done well, if it's done properly, it is much more beneficial than avoiding sunlight and using SPFs.
Yeah, amazing. And the other thing I wanted to just tick off the list, just because I want to be able to make sure that people know about it, is the dark room, the dark, cold room at nighttime.
Thank you. Yes. So that will enable your body to be able to rest more fully and more deeply so you can access the benefits of the melatonin moving through your circulation in a way that creates systemic, like full body cell repair. And if you're missing out on that component, then it's going to make it much harder for you to live your best life.
Yeah, absolutely. So for anybody that's still loving your vibe, where can they find you on the internet to come and hang out with you? And who might actually reach out to you?
I love supporting anyone that honestly is ready to go a little bit deeper. I'm obviously not particularly surface level, and I do work between all four aspects of self. In my opinion, that's the only way: mental, physical, emotional, and spiritual. And that's not for everybody. However, I that's how I operate. So people can access lots of free resources on my website, which is piakynoch.com, piakynoch.com, or Pia, the spiritual naturopath, on social media. I'm really open to questions. I do free connection calls for people who are truly interested in moving into their next layers of development and growth. And I'm seriously here for people who want to make a difference to their lives and create positive ripple effects.
Yeah, beautiful. I'll put all of those links in the show notes below. So scroll down, click the links, jump into Pia's world. And to finish off, and I know you've already answered this question once, but what is one piece of health information you wish more people knew about?
Get your skin in the game.
Yes.
Get your skin in the game. Like, the more skin you have in natural light, the more your body will be able to be for you.
Yeah, I love that. And for anybody that's like, yeah, but what about cancer? Wait for the next episode and we'll talk about that.
Yeah, wait for the next episode. And I also just want to say to people, so UVA, as it gets higher during the day, that would be the time to not be out in the sun as much. You can always utilize shade. You don't have to be out in the direct sun. And the more time you spend out from dawn to that 30 degrees, you will set your skin up for being most responsive to light cues. So just avoid the middle part of the day, be in the shade more. Your risk is incredibly low.
Amazing. Pia, thanks so much for being on the show again, and I'll catch you on the next one.
All right, honey. Thank you. Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Hey, Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you enjoyed this episode or learnt anything at all, the gift of your 5-star rating would be incredibly helpful. And what's even more powerful is if you write a review. You can do it below each episode on Spotify, every time an episode comes out, and inside Apple Podcast. Simply find the main page of this show with all the episodes on it, scroll to the bottom, hit write a review, share your amazing feedback, and then hit send. It helps this show grow tremendously and allows me to successfully invite bigger and more famous guests each time we do the show. Thank you, thank you, thank you for helping us climb the charts, climb the algorithm, and help more people. Oh, and by the way, I have a short disclaimer as well. I just wanted to quickly remind you that the information provided on this podcast is for general informational purposes only. While we strive to bring you accurate and up-to-date content, it's important to note that a lot of this is mixed with opinions, stories, and ideas not supported by mainstream science or medicine. Any advice or suggestions should not be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always consult a healthcare provider before making any decisions about the health and wellness of you and your family. Remember too that what works for one person may not work for another. And just as we promote on the show, each person is responsible for their own health decisions. Thank you for tuning into the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. And now, the next episode. Here it is.